The reputation of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh has been smeared again. The New York Times has recently ostensibly disgraced itself by publishing an unsubstantiated report of alleged shameful deeds of Kavanaugh back in college days a few decades ago. Hello and welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Carrie Severino. She is the co-author of a best-selling book, New York Times best-selling book, speaking of the New York Times, Justice on Trial. And Carrie Severino serves as chief counsel and policy director for the Judicial Crisis Network. Carrie, great to have you on the program again. Thank you.
Hey, great to be here.
So it seems like the left is not willing to let this guy go. I mean, Brett Kavanaugh, he made it to the Supreme Court by a very, very close vote. And then as we saw the zombies, they seemed like zombies went to the Supreme Court building and they started clawing at the doors like, don't let this guy serve. And, you know, it's just ridiculous. They're trying to destroy the reputation of Brett Kavanaugh, maybe to marginalize him so he won't rule against Roe v. Wade. Or if he does, they'll just say, oh, well, he, you know, of course he's going to rule against it. He's, you know, he has no credibility.
Well, I think you hit the nail right on the head, and that's what Ryan Lovelace reported recently uncovered video of Deborah Kapp, Christine Blasey Ford's lawyer, saying exactly that. We wanted to put an asterisk on him. They acknowledged that blocking him entirely would be very difficult, but let's at least discredit him so that he doesn't have as much influence in the court. And I've seen that in real action, too, because I clerked for Justice Thomas, and they've done the same thing to him. And he's one of the most original and significant thinkers on the court, and yet for a large swath of Americans, instead of that, they just keep on seeing this asterisk of, oh yes, the confirmation process. Oh yeah, maybe he assaulted someone. So that is absolutely their goal. It's part of a broader theme of attacking judicial independence, because I think it also goes to them potentially wanting to be able to, you know, have justices know that if you step out of line here, we can make your life pretty miserable, and it requires very little to do that, because when you don't need evidence for an allegation, the bar is a lot lower.
Yeah. Okay. Tell us some of the details, if you would, about the recent New York Times report and just the fact that they had to retract it.
Right. Yeah. So this is from a book that was recently published by two New York Times authors. And before the book came out on Tuesday, they had a piece out in the New York Times on Sunday, which kind of talked about, it was an excerpt, largely an excerpt from their book, but it was not just an excerpt, it was an edited excerpt. And they talked in one section of it about a new allegation they thought kind of fit in a similar pattern with the Deborah Ramirez allegation. But what they didn't include in the New York Times article was the fact that they already knew that the woman in this allegation apparently does not even remember anything like what's alleged here. So that is obviously an incredibly important factor. It makes the allegation virtually worthless if you're really trying to get to the bottom of, is this something true that we should be thinking is accurate about Justice Kavanaugh? But it fit much better in their narrative, I think, to include it as if it's corroborative. So they have now blamed their editors for having taken it out. But of course, having written for some of these papers, I know that the journalist does get the last word. Maybe they were sloppy in reading it. But the editor should be ashamed of themselves, too, because taking out such a key piece of evidence is really undermines the journalistic integrity of the story. It's journalistic malpractice. And I think a lot of people, left, right, and center, have said this is absolutely shameful, yeah, what was being done there. And I'll tell you, having read the entire book, thankfully, Molly Hemingway and I, my co-author, were able to get early copies of it so that we were able to respond to it immediately afterwards and tell them, and eventually help convince the New York Times to issue this retraction of that section or correction of that section. But there's a whole lot more like that. That's just an example of the kind of theme of telling part of the story and leaving out all of the context and the exculpatory evidence that doesn't fit your narrative.
You know, it's interesting, as I was looking, trying to understand this story and looking at the weeds, so to speak, it seemed as if the ultimate source for these two New York Times reporters against Kavanaugh, the ultimate source, was some sort of person who was, you know, tied into the Clintons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was, in fact, a hatchet man for the Clintons during The same litigation against Bill Clinton that Brett Kavanaugh himself was involved in, because he worked for Ken Starr. So but the way they present him in the book is just as this painfully neutral and bipartisan type of person, which, you know, maybe that's what he does in his career now, but it's relevant for people to know this is someone who's had a long-standing oppositional relationship to Brett Kavanaugh, and that does provide some very much needed context.
Yeah.
When he's the only voice in the room on this particular allegation.
I saw on your Twitter feed there was a meme that you had posted, and it said this: the Democrats use the liberal media to report unproven stories because it's more important to get the information out there than it is to get it right. And this is so sad, because talk about the politics of personal destruction.
Yeah, and that's the frustrating thing, is it's seems to be at a point not about the facts so much as the message. And this is true when you get to the end of this new Kavanaugh book as well. They basically, as much as say, you know what, we didn't gain any more information in terms of corroboration of these allegations, and they were looking specifically at Ford and at Ramirez. No new information, no new witnesses, no new evidence, but in our gut, we believe them. And that's really what it's coming down to. It's really an appeal to just, let's get people to make a snap gut judgment. And unfortunately, in the process, they actually overlooked some real new evidence they did get. Molly Hemingway and I, in our book, we reported for the first time the depth of distrust that Leland Kaiser had for her friend's allegations. This is the one woman who is alleged to have been at the party, who said at the time simply, "I don't remember it." But we learned later what she did say to the FBI when they did the investigation is, "Not only do I not remember it, but I have thought through that whole summer. I've looked for back at high school pictures. This whole story sounds crazy. I do not remember anything like this happening, and it sounds totally implausible to me." So that goes a lot farther. And they actually have some on-the-record quotes from her, which is the first time she's spoken on the record. You would think that would be blockbuster news. The problem is the fact that, you know, that the last shred of potential, maybe it still happened, but she didn't remember it, story from Christine Blasey Ford is now completely gone. You have her own friend and a liberal friend saying, "This totally cannot have happened in my mind." They didn't want to talk about that. And that's I think that just is telling, that they discount her actual testimony completely. And as well as many other friends of Kavanaugh who are quoted in this book saying this sounds nothing like what he would do. That just all goes out the window when we only believe people on one side. That is not a fact-based way to do things.
Tell me about Brett Kavanaugh's reputation, especially after you and Molly Hemingway put together this best-selling book about him. The more you learned about him, did you respect him more, or did you, you know, think, well, maybe there's stumbling through these allegations because there's so many of them?
The more we looked at the allegations, there was a clear pattern in those, and that was a pattern of cooperation with liberal senators, in particular. If you'll note, almost, I think every single allegation that came out against him somehow came from a senator with a state with blue state senators. So it was all just who are the convenient people who will carry this message forward for us. When we talked to people who actually knew him.
Wait, you said years, blue state senators, you mean? Oh, okay. In other words, Democrats.
All the allegations came from Democratic.
Yeah.
Democratic senators.
Exactly.
Right. And
yeah,
his friend that we talked to had a very different story. He was, especially talking to some of the women who knew him in high school, and they said, "Oh my gosh, he's the opposite. He was not a womanizer. He actually seemed like he was a little, you know, nervous around the girls." And we knew him much more as a really good friend. He's the guy they would call for help on their homework. He was the guy you would have called for help if someone else did that to you, kind of thing. One woman said, I can count on one hand, maybe less, the number of men in my life I would stand up for against a claim like that and say, "No, I can," even though you can never, you know, you weren't there,
sure,
to be able to say it, you have to have that confidence in them. She said, "I can count on my hand that number, and he's absolutely on there. I know people in high school who would have done this. That is a million miles away from him." So the more people we talked to, the more we got a very consistent picture of him, and it is completely at odds with the story that you get from the media. Often, you know, when you look at the sources that are quoted, it's not actually the people who were in the central group of friends. It's people who are more on the periphery. Maybe they went to the same school, but, you know, I had a lot of people saying, gosh, how did he even know? He never was at our parties. How would he know if Brett was drinking or not at the party? So it was interesting to hear that perspective.
What do you think drove Christine Blasey Ford, and what do you think happened to her?
Well, Molly and I try carefully not to speculate. I mean, there's a lot of people that have different theories as to how she came to making this allegation that doesn't have evidence behind it. We just really kind of try to confine ourselves to the facts. We can just looking at it, we have still no evidence that she even ever actually met him, apart from her own statements. We have a lot of inconsistencies in her story, a lot of changes in her story, including some that she changed from her Senate testimony to this book. So she has said some things in the book that are different from the Senate testimony, and that's a really important consideration too. So her story has been very shifting. Now, whether that's because she was inventing it, whether that's because something like this happened to her and she's incorrectly associated it with Brett Kavanaugh, whether it's because this entire incident is somehow an amalgam of other memories, we don't know. We actually talk about some of the memory research done, and that shows that, unfortunately, memory is very malleable. So it's possible that she remembers something, even traumatic events. People can have memories that are not correct and that are very much at odds with what happened. And so I think it's totally possible also that she remembered something, that she feels very strongly this is the case, but nonetheless, it's not true.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you should say this. At a school reunion, grade school reunion a few years ago, I asked this girl that I had thought was sitting next to me when we first learned the news of John F. Kennedy's assassination. You know, we were in seventh grade. I was 12 years old or whatever. Anyway, I was a young boy, and I thought I remembered this one girl saying, "I'm not going to go home and play today. I'm going to go home and pray today." But I thought it was person X. And when I asked that person X, 30, 40 years later, she said, "That wasn't me. I was homesick that day." And I'm like, "You mean to say that I've had this memory wrong for more than 40 years?" Now, that's just anecdotal, didn't Ford's own father say, "Well, I'm sorry, but I don't agree"? You know, believer in this, or somebody close?
Yeah, not in so many words, but he did say, and he did. We talked about in our book how during the actual events that her family was not there. I mean, there was a letter of support from family that got discussed a lot in the press, and they weren't pointing out the fact that everyone on that letter was actually her in-laws, not her immediate family. Mm. Her family was not there at the hearing, although they did submit a statement that was generally supportive, saying basically, "We love our daughter. We support our daughter," which I think was, very, very loving of them to do. However, we broke new news of the fact that after Kavanaugh was confirmed, Ralph Blasey wrote to his father, Ed, saying, "This has been difficult for all of us, and I'm glad Rhett was confirmed. If you really thought this man tried to rape your daughter, it's hard to imagine making that statement." And so I think that's just a testimony. So it kind of fits in the category with Leland, where these are people who love her very much, who are close to her, but also that, don't believe that is, or at least it seems the case of Ralph Blasey, do not seem to believe that this event happened as she remembers it. We did definitely uncover that there were a lot of people who were using her in many ways, including, and this new book even sheds more light on this, the fact that her lawyers were trying to manipulate her into doing more publicly than she felt comfortable with in terms of public testimony, in terms of testifying in D.C., et cetera. So that's also, I think part of this picture of what was going on.
We have 20 seconds left. What's your website for the book?
The book doesn't have a website, but you can check out my work on judges at judicialnetwork.com, and you can follow me at JCN Severino on Twitter, or Molly at MZ Hemingway on Twitter, and we're still breaking new news about these allegations.
Justice on Trial is your book. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.